At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu. At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding, whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. This week, I'm joined by Joel Frost. Joel is a qualified health coach and eating disorder specialist. Joe founded Reminded, who supports sporty and active people who have recognised that they have a disordered relationship with food and movement. Reminded aims to empower them with the tools and education to perform at the highest level possible whilst optimising their lives further than the sports pitch. Joel was inspired to build Reminded following his personal journey grappling with an eating disorder for 5 years, which coincided with his dreams of pursuing a career as a professional golfer. This week is Men's Mental Health Week, and so it's really important that we bring up the conversation of eating disorders in men and show that eating disorders can impact anybody and they can impact anybody in any way. I had such a lovely conversation with Joel talking about his experience as well as his business Reminded, so I really hope you enjoy this episode. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Joel. It's so nice to be speaking with you. It's really funny because I feel like I've only recently sort of connected with you on Instagram, but it feels, I don't know, I feel like I know you a lot more than I should do.
Yeah, it's, well, thanks for having me on, firstly, Hannah. It's lovely to be speaking. But yeah, it's, I think when people are sort of connected through eating disorders and, you know, understanding a little bit about the topic, it kind of just makes people grow a little bit closer together without even meeting each other. It's lovely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think because you know such a big piece of someone's history, you then kind of, you know, I think we're both quite open about our experiences, which is amazing. So you feel like you know someone a bit more. But I guess for the listeners that don't know you, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a bit about what you do?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so obviously my name's Joel. I'm 24 years old. I've recently set up a business called Reminded that looks to support sporty and active people recover from an eating disorder. And it was all sort of based on my own journey of suffering with an eating disorder for 5 years whilst trying to become a professional golfer. And I've loved my sport all through my life, and it's been a massive, massive part of my, just every day, really. And, you know, and I felt that when I became recovered, I was really lucky to find someone special who I instantly connected with, like we're speaking today. You know, we create that connection quite quickly. I found that with Caroline, my eating disorder specialist. But I sort of looked around and felt that there was no one really supporting people in sport and looking to help people or even be relatable, you know. So, yeah, that was kind of the idea behind it. And you know, just really want to support people who love sport and love, you know, taking care of themselves. And yes, that's a tiny snapshot of me, obviously, as we speak, we'll learn a bit more. But yeah, it's the kind of overall brief.
Amazing. Thank you. And I think you're so right. It's such a complex relationship when you struggle with an eating disorder, but you're also very passionate about sport, because obviously it can become something. You know, exercise can be something that you can participate in and have a very healthy lifestyle, but equally it can be taken to another level and become something unhealthy. And I just wondered maybe if you would mind like sharing a bit more about what your experience of your eating disorder was.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. So I sort of remember my eating disorder sort of starting when I was probably around 15, 16. It was GCSEs for those people in the UK who know what that is. So I was never really the brightest student. I had to work quite hard to do all right. So yeah, I remember being really stressed out and sort of using food a little bit to kind of, you know, cope through that and manage my stress, really. I think at that time I was developing and growing and, you know, I probably had a little bit more puppy fat, maybe people might say. So I started receiving comments from friends, but a few people, well, I wouldn't view them as friends really anymore, but, you know, from people who were close to me, and they started to make jokes, and, you know, it was perceived as banter at the time. And I just thought, like, what's this about? You know, why are people saying this? And then, so I finished my GCSEs, I left school, and I went to a college called Hartbury College, which some people may have heard of. It's quite a sporty college, and I went there to play golf and do a bit of studying. I got to Hartbury, and it was an amazing place, but it's full of very, very athletic looking people. So there's a high level rugby team, high level football team, netball, equine. So I got there as this sort of, you know, young guy who was a little bit chubby. And I just felt really self-conscious from the get-go and thought, wow, oh, I don't look like this. You know, this is really different. And because of the school I was at beforehand, it was a bit of a bubble. So I found myself starting to go, I got a gym membership, and I remember sitting and doing quite large amounts of exercise to then try and lose weight. And then I started to, and because I was getting up quite early to get the bus, started to skip breakfast because it was, at the time, it was the easy thing to do. Why would I have breakfast at 6 o'clock in the morning? You know, I'll just skip it. It's fine. So, and then I did that sort of for a year. And then I got to my final year of college. I turned 18. I had lost weight by then, and my golf was going really well. I was playing in sort of the first team at Hartbury. I was captaining the side. The golf itself was going good. I found myself receiving more compliments from other people, people talking about my weight, receiving more attention and stuff. And so I thought, what's wrong with this? Like, this is fine, you know? And at that point, I started to use purging as a way, if I'd overeaten, to, you know, get rid of that food. But obviously now knowing it doesn't. But and so I thought, yeah, this is great. What's wrong with this? And then sort of went through that process and never really got any more dramatic than that for the next couple of years. I stayed on at Hartbury to do university there as I got a scholarship playing golf and studying. And then COVID came. And obviously for everyone, that was really stressful and really, really random. And we got told you're only allowed to exercise for 45 minutes. So I was like, okay, I've got to make the most of this exercise and I've got to do it every day. So it was two meals a day. And at that point, my golf had become really stressful. And I'm sure we'll go into sort of more detail about that as the podcast goes on. But I decided not to go down the route of becoming a professional golfer. So I was just running, and I was just running 10K a day, if not more. I would drink quite a bit as well. And then I would restrict food, have two meals a day. And again, that sort of carried on. Went back to uni for my final year, and yeah, we were there with, you know, for example, there would be parties. I would go running in the evening because I didn't want to skip running the next day, because I didn't want to be too sort of hungover to not run and things like this. And then I was just like, yeah, this is not right. Something isn't right here. And then I watched a documentary by the cricketer Freddie Flintoff. Who you may have seen his documentary, and it, I love it. And I watched it again. I saw, like, watched the first 10 minutes recently, and I was just like, this is mm-hmm. incredible. But I watched it
just to said, sorry, I have to say my claim to fame here. In it there's a guy called Aiden who has bulimia. He's my best friend,
really.
I went to uni with him, and he's actually class. He was the first person I ever had on this podcast as well.
Wow, I have to go back and listen to that.
Yeah, you have to go back.
Amazing. Well, what a legend, because all the stories on there, not just Freddie Flintoff's, were so heavy hitting and so beautifully said and done by the BBC. So, yeah, what a documentary. But so I saw that documentary and I just said, this is me. I relate to every single thing he is saying, everyone is saying. And I loved playing cricket when I was younger as well. So I was like, it's okay. It's all right. An eating disorder is okay. I'm allowed to have this as a male. You know, obviously growing up, the stigma was, you know, skinny women in their sort of middle age, you know. So, but then I was like, it's fine. Freddie Flintoff, you know, one of the greatest English cricketers of all time, has had an eating disorder. It's okay. I spoke to my mum, spoke to my girlfriend, Claire. They were so supportive. And I sort of just passed it on to them, not in like a horrible way. I just said, this is what I'm dealing with. My mum, you know, signed up for a course, a free course with the National Center for Eating Disorders. And Caroline, the woman that I, who was my recovery specialist, she was doing a talk. And my mum got her details. I worked with Caroline for 12 amazing weeks. And yeah, I've been, you know, had freedom with food since then, freedom with exercise, and obviously, you know, gone into this world of eating disorders and supporting people. So again, a really brief sort of snapshot of that story, but yeah, it's cool to look back on and kind of see the change over the years.
Yeah, and I always feel so bad when I'm like, so can you just give me a brief overview of the worst part of your life, please? Because, you know, it always sounds very much like we've got it all figured out. But obviously, when you're in the depth of it, it's so difficult and confusing, and you're just kind of lost, like, what the hell is going on? Mm. But I am firstly really grateful. Thank you for sharing your story, because I think what you said there about the fact that, you know, you watched that documentary of Freddie Flintoff and you were like, oh, my God, like, Freddie Flintoff has an eating disorder, you know, this kind of very masculine, like, successful cricket player. He's been hiding with this and he's now talking about it. Like, that means that it's okay for me to talk about. And I think, you know, that's why it's so important. Obviously, it's Men's Health Week this week. And that's why I really wanted to get you on this week to share your story, because I think the more men that talk about their experience, the more we're realizing, holy shit, this isn't something that just affects teenage girls. This is something that affects everybody, and also affects everybody in any way. Like, I think there is also a kind of trend, I don't know what it's not trend, but like idea coming out that if a man has an eating disorder, it must be muscle dysmorphia. And I'm so passionate about being like, no, like, a man can struggle with any eating disorder, whether it's anorexia, binge eating disorder, bulimia, ARFID, whatever. It's not just muscle dysmorphia that they're affected by. And I think by having those open conversations, it really helps for people, you know, in a situation like you were, to be like, I'm not alone in this.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with everything you're saying there. I think that eating disorders are so wide. And, you know, when you technically get trained in eating disorders, you learn about all of these, you know, this wide range of eating disorders that people suffer with. And as you say, it's not just muscle dysmorphia. You know, that's obviously a very common thing these days and people are talking about. But, you know, my eating disorder wasn't just one eating disorder. Like, I had the anorexic mindset. I had the bulimic traits. You know, I had some binge eating in there, you know. And it's just, rather than, you know, packaging everyone in one thing and saying eating disorder is just an eating disorder, it's like, no, there are many different sort of complex ways. And I think something, I don't know about you, Hannah, but I look back at my eating disorder and I look back at everything and I go, yeah, as rubbish as that is and as hard as that was, I wouldn't wish it away, because I learned so many valuable things. And I you know, I'm obviously in a place now, recovered, and I know some people hearing this might say, ah, how can he say that, you know, but it's taught me so many valuable lessons for life. I don't know about you, Hannah, if you think that.
Yeah, I undoubtedly agree. I've been in and out of anorexia for 14 years. And, you know, it's made me so self-aware, it's unbelievable. But also yeah. I think it's made me very resilient and just you know, have compassion that I didn't have before. So I definitely agree. I think you learn so much about yourself, and it just make you a stronger person. But you know, not that I would wish it on anybody or wish to go through it again, but I think, you know, to see the positive from it is a really nice way to reflect on what you've experienced. I wanted to ask you more about your kind of journey with golf, because I think one thing that I thought was really interesting about your story, and from what you've described, it does kind of sound like it was the social pressure of everybody at your college and the way that they were looking and stuff. But obviously we hear a lot about eating disorders in like weight categorized sports or aesthetic sports, and not so much because I just don't think the research is there. But I'm really interested to hear about your journey with golf and how your eating disorder came about and impacted that.
Interestingly, I sort of only kind of realized in the last few months why.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
I feel like golf fueled my eating disorder, because at first I just thought it was running, because I really got into competitive running when I was sort of 20, I believe. And I just thought running was fueling it. And actually I look back and I played golf since when I was 14, you know, I'm still playing now. But I, as a child and still to when I was about 20, 21, if I played badly at golf or I didn't have a good game that day, it would be a self-reflection of how I feel about myself. So if I played badly, I thought I was worthless. I thought I was useless. I thought I was good for nothing. I couldn't see any other good qualities in my life at that time. So therefore, food was something in which, you know, so golf is something that you can have, you know, a decent amount of control on, but you can hit an amazing shot and the wind can come up and suddenly it goes over to the right, it hits something and it like goes, you're in all sorts of trouble and you're like, what the heck, I've just hit a really good shot and it's been rubbish. So you have sometimes very little control, and I felt so out of control of golf and my emotions and my self-worth. So I saw food as a way to be able to counteract that and balance that. So, you know, if I would play badly, then maybe I would restrict food that evening because I'd be controlling that. And yeah, and it all came down to that self-worth, you know, the pressure I put on myself to perform and play well every single time, you know, would say be a self-reflection of how I would feel about myself, which now I look at it very differently, because I play golf now, and if I don't play very well, which you know happens to the best players in the world, I just say, well, I've got all these other amazing things in my life. I run competitively now still, but with a healthy mindset. I get the opportunity to support people, run my own business. I have a really loving and caring girlfriend. I have a loving and caring family. I have a good circle of friends. I'm creative. I love making videos, you know, all these different things, you know, whereas in the past it was just golf. If I played good at golf, I was a good person. I was happy with myself. If I played bad at golf, I was worthless and there was nothing good about me. So yeah, that's literally only been the last couple of months, you know, sort of self-discovery of realizing that that's what golf was doing, which has been really interesting.
Yeah. And I personally, golf is not my thing. I'm so shit. I went to a driving range once with my friends and I couldn't even get the ball to register because I was so bad at it. But my partner is really, really into golf. And he's recently started doing it because it's like, you know, he goes to the gym, but wanted an activity that, you know, he could do with friends, but was a bit more sociable than the gym. Anyway, he will often say, like, you know, once I hit a bad shot and then beat myself up, my golf just goes to shit, because it's so much about like your mentality and, you know, getting yourself in position. So I can imagine if you're telling yourself you're shit and you're also not eating enough to fuel yourself to feel good about yourself, your golf's going to be getting shitter as well. So it's like a never-ending cycle.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting you say that, because I would play in sort of big competitions where you would play 36 holes. Obviously, the standard is 18 in one day, and that's, you're out there for 4.5 hours, you know, whereas I'd play 36 holes in one day, and I probably wasn't fueling properly. I wasn't taking care of, I wasn't, you know, looking after myself. I wasn't, you know, to perform, you know, this whole idea. I really love the word perform in the, you know, used in the right context, but I definitely wasn't, you know, fueling to perform. And, you know, and it's interesting you talk about the mind as well. I read a book by a sports psychologist, golf sports psychologist called Bob Rotella. And again, that sort of changed my outlook on golf and, you know, this whole idea of the power of the mind, and not just in golf, but in life, and, you know, believing in what you're doing and sticking to the process and being committed and knowing what you want. Like when you hit a golf shot, you know where you're going to hit it. You're only thinking about that and you're not thinking about anything else. And I just think the power of the mind is amazing. So it's really fascinating. Whereas in the past golf, it was like, oh, if I got at this club in this position and I just do that all the time, I'm going to be amazing. It's like, nah, it doesn't work like that. Sadly not.
So you mentioned that you had to drop out of playing professionally as well because of your eating disorder. And I can imagine, you know, because you were saying before your whole life was golf, whereas now you have a really good mix of lots of different things in your life to make you feel good. Did that make the eating disorder worse, or was it a positive thing stepping away from the golf?
I think over time, stepping away from golf for a few years was a good thing. You know, I always had this dream of kind of turning professional and doing that. So I was playing like high level amateur golf. But yeah, when I stepped away, I was probably 19 years old when I said, okay, I don't want to go down the path of being a professional golfer, because I saw so many 26-year-olds trying to turn professional and just not, you know, and then being like, I can't do this anymore, I'm not good enough. What do I do with my life? So I really was like, okay, I'm not going to put all my eggs in one basket. But yeah, I sort of fell out of the love with the sport for a good couple of years. And those couple of years, you know, where I was 20 and 21, you know, when I was 20 and 21 were COVID. So that was really the hardest time for me with my eating disorder and where it really kicked off. And there was a lot going on in my life and at that point. And I remember just not really having any direction and not really knowing, you know, what I wanted next, because I knew I didn't want golf full time, but I still loved it. So, you know, I resorted to kind of like partying and enjoying myself a bit, and yeah, just not being like, because I didn't have anything anymore to focus on. I was doing a degree, which I'd chosen to do alongside playing golf full time. So I was kind of just a bit lost and a bit confused, and the food was just sort of going along on the side, not anything too extreme, but I wasn't, again, fueling myself to perform just in everyday life. Like if I wanted to just, you know, be an energized human being trying to do work, I wasn't even doing that, and I was still trying to run a bit. I was still sort of in the golf, hitting some golf balls and trying to carry on and do a little bit of it. So yeah, I was a bit lost really after I said no to it.
Yeah, and I can imagine as well that that's such a perfect time for an eating disorder to pop up, you know, if it's already in your life and then you're like, okay, golfing was my thing and I can't do that anymore, and also now we're in a pandemic and I'm really lonely because I can't see anyone. It's like an eating disorder comes in, it's like, hi, you can be good at me, we can be best friends, like I can take up all your time, you know, I'll distract you from the boredom, from the loneliness, I'll make you feel good. But then obviously you realise as you get deeper into it, it doesn't make you feel good because those goalposts are constantly moving. So, you know, that sounds like a perfect storm for the eating disorder to come in, you know, if it was already kind of there anyway. And, you know, I have a similar thing during COVID. I found that so hard because everybody was, without sounding horrible, I don't need to discipline myself to go to the gym and stuff because I love going to gym. So I do CrossFit. But, and so even when we were when we were all forced to be home, I didn't need motivation to exercise because it was a big part of my life and this is something that I enjoy. So I was kind of, at one point, we had a tree cut down in our garden and I was lifting weights just with like the logs of the trees. I had like a backpack of rocks to do squats with. So it was, I was pretty creative.
But
obviously,
wicked.
A lot of people did need motivation and they did need to be told, you know, now you're working from home, don't keep going to the biscuit barrel or whatever. I mean, nobody did need to hear that. We were stressed as we were.
Yeah.
That should increase our stress. But there were so many of those messages that for me, it then became something I was like, oh, well, you know, I'm not commuting to work anymore. I'm not going to go see friends. And in all of that time, I'll just exercise because I know that that's something that I'm good at. I know that's something that I enjoy. And then, you know, you start to get into a routine of doing, you know, one workout and then one workout becomes two workouts. And it's very difficult when there's nothing else going on. You don't have any other identity to say to yourself, this isn't right.
Yeah, you're spot on. Feels so much good in what you've just said there. That thing of like an eating disorder at first is really attractive because the characteristics of people with an eating disorder, there's three, I can only remember two right now, but it's perfectionists, which you may relate to, and it's low self-worth. And if you're low, and if you have low self-worth and you're really good at something, you're obviously going to go be attracted towards that, aren't you? So like, why wouldn't you do this thing that, I'm doing well at this. You feel a little bit above other people. You feel like, I'm working hard. You know, I always used to love being running out in the rain. So I'd be like, where are you suckers? Like, no one else is out here. It's just that thing. And actually, it's attractive. So it's amazing what you said.
Yeah. I think that's often not spoken about because people feel a bit of a prick saying it. But I am always like that. It used to be like that, sorry. When I'd be exercising, I'd be getting up at 6 a.m. to go to the gym, or I'd be going out in the rain, or, you know, nothing would stop me. And people would be like, God, Hannah, I wish I had your dedication. And that, you know, when, like you said, when you have low self-worth and then people are reinforcing those behaviours that, you know, actually are really impacting your life, because, yes, I would go to the gym overseeing my friends, because to me the gym is the most important thing because that's part of my identity. But then when people are like, oh, it's amazing how dedicated you are and all that, and you're like, the rest of my life falling apart, but let's just ignore that.
It's funny what you cling on to. It's funny how the brain works, isn't it? It's an amazing yet complex scenario, isn't it?
Absolutely. How have you now reshaped golf so that it's something that you can enjoy? Because I assume from what you said, you're not doing it professionally now. Maybe it's more of a hobby as a sport. So that seems to me quite a difficult shift to go from something that, like, I'm going to have a career in this. Actually, I'm going to step away and because I feel like this is negatively impacting me, and now I've got an eating disorder, to then be something to just do kind of as a hobby and then enjoy that and not kind of go back into those behaviours.
Yeah, so I think obviously taking time out was a really brilliant thing and really just helped me refresh and find other things in my life that I could be good at, or, you know, I could tell myself that I was good at, because a big part of my life was that I just couldn't say well done to myself or anything like that. So, you know, obviously going out and starting a career was really amazing, and then, you know, setting up a business, I started to go like, I'm good at some stuff. Like, I can work hard, and I can communicate with people, I can listen to people. You know, those are amazing skills that no one accredits people for, really, or we certainly don't accredit ourselves for. So, you know, that really helped. And I started to have a really good circle of friends as well, just really supportive. And again, it just feeds into that, like, there's more to golf. You know, there's more to life than just golf. And, you know, so I think just creating those things outside of golf just lifted my self-worth, so that when I came back to golf and I decided to, you know, because I still want to play, you know, competitively in an amateur level. But I just, you know, now it's just, as I say, I step off the golf course after a good game and I step off the golf course after a bad game, and they're pretty much the same feelings. You know, I might feel after I finished, if I played well, I might feel really good for an hour. And if I've not played so well, I might go and hit a few balls and practice and kind of work out maybe why didn't that go so well today? Or what was my thought process like? Or, you know, and break it down. Whereas in the past, if I'd played badly, it would have been, I'm going to spend another 5 hours here at the golf course. I'm going to, you know, tire myself out. I'm going to feel rubbish. I'm not going to eat. Whereas now, obviously, I'm busier, so I can't do that. But it's like, okay, was my mindset just not very good today? You know, something as simple as that, whereas I would never have seen that. So, yeah, I've just slowly put things in place quite unconsciously. I haven't really thought about any of these things, you know, but I've just learned over time what's best for me, what works well for me. And found my perfect recipe almost, which has been handy.
Yeah. I think that's so important what you were saying there about, like, that's what I am trying to do now in terms of my recovery. Is when you're having a bad day, you know, like, let's say you don't play golf very well, rather than just being like, you're shit. It's like, okay, what's going on right now? Because for me, a lot of my issues are still with body dysmorphia. And if I have a bad day, I'm like, okay, the reflection's bad, but that doesn't mean that you're bad. It's what else is going on in life at the moment. So I think it's amazing that you've been able to recognize that and then actually, you know, give yourself space to process that rather than just kind of saying, oh, you're shit, and, you know, then treating yourself like that.
I don't know about you, Hannah, but I think the power of reframing is massive. You know, I talk about it with clients all the time. People having a fat feeling, or, you know, looking at themselves in the mirror, and I ask them, you know, okay, you're having a fat feeling, but what else might it be? You know, I don't know if you've ever experienced that. Like, maybe you're just tired today. Mm-hmm. Maybe you just had an argument with your partner. Yeah. Maybe you feel invalidated because you didn't say no to that thing that you were desperate to say no to. You know, it could just be something small. I don't know if you've ever found that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think definitely it massively comes down to your mood and the way that you're feeling, which then obviously changes the way that you feel about your body. Because it's easy to take it out on yourself and to blame that rather than to actually work out what's going on.
Yeah, so it's easy. I say it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you saw it. It's probably a while ago before we started following each other, but I did a video. It's called, like, Choose Your Heart, and, you know, it's easy to be negative about yourself, but it's really hard to pick yourself up, isn't it? And it's choosing your heart, because ultimately being, you know, nice to yourself is hard, but in the long run it's going to help you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it massively, but I think it's because society normalizes this, like, hustle culture where we all hate ourselves, whereas you know, having compassion and time out for yourself is not really the
What do you do to, like, just spend time and enjoy yourself?
Oh dear. That's definitely something I'm still working on. Definitely I have two cats, so cuddling them
can't go
definitely
wrong.
Helps. What about you?
I don't know, I just love reading. I like a good film as well. Proper, like, I don't drink anymore, so my night out is going to the cinema as well. So that's quite nice.
Yeah, I like that. I've actually cut down my drinking a lot just because. So I recently got diagnosed with ADHD, and I just find that the next day, it just, my mood is so low from drinking. So it's like, no, I'm not. I just have, like, one or two, and then I feel a bit happier, but because I don't want to not drink, because I do like having a glass of Prosecco.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, it's then also really nice in the morning. Or, like, the other day I went to a festival with my friends. They were getting absolutely smashed, and I just had a couple of drinks, and then the festival finished at 11, and me and my partner were like, let's go home, I can't wait to get into bed. And it was just so funny, like, they were all going to after parties and stuff, and I was like, I'm so happy right now, like, I do not want to be going to an after party.
So funny. My friend said this amazing thing to me. He said, no one has ever woken up in the morning and thought, I wish I drank last night, you know. Whereas we all wake up in the morning going, oh, I wish I didn't drink last night.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's really nice when you reach that point as well that you can be comfortable in yourself without alcohol. I think that's something I've been working on lately, is like not feeling like I need alcohol to make me a better person or a more interesting person, actually. Yeah. Like, I can be confident in myself with no drink in me, and that's a really nice feeling as well.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's a bit of a culture thing, isn't it? You know, having a drink and, oh, let's go for a drink, and actually, you know, it's just lovely to kind of, you know, be comfortable in your own skin. You know, as I mentioned earlier, drinking was something for me which took me away and made me feel good about myself when maybe I couldn't do that without alcohol. And, you know, it's interesting having to remove that stimulus, what it does for you, and putting yourself in social situations and just chatting and, you know, and just having a laugh with your mates. And yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, this is going to sound really bad because I was absolutely the person that used to talk gobbledygook when they were drunk. But that's also one of my favourite things now. It's like just listening to people, I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm so glad I'm not you right now. But I think it's interesting, isn't it, as well? Because I don't know if this was the case for you, but for me it was massively like I had an eating disorder, and that made me feel, you know, and originally I thought that made me feel better, but ended up making me feel shit. And the only way to escape from that for a little bit was to drink. And so then I would drink. But then the next day it was like a double-edged sword, because it was then I'd wake up and I'd feel awful. My mood was low, but I'd also feel really guilty for drinking, potentially for eating more than I normally would. And then because of the low mood, like, you're just in an even worse position than what you were before. But in that moment, you think, oh, this is a great idea, because it will just take that noise away for a bit and make me a little bit more confident, where I didn't have that confidence, we didn't have the self-worth.
Yeah, massively. It's just an escape, isn't it, sometimes?
It
seems like the good idea, and then the next day it's really, really tricky to handle.
Absolutely. So I wanted to ask you a few questions about Rebinded. So firstly, I love the name, but I wanted to ask you where the name came from.
It was a long process. I worked with an amazing guy called Stephen Wadcock, who there's me, and then there's Stephen. I call, like, Stephen the creative director of Rebinded, or, you know, head of marketing or whatever, but he's amazing. So we sort of sat down and we went through, you know, who is our ideal customer and who do we want to help and who do we want to support, and, you know, how do we want Rebinded to feel and sound? Obviously, we haven't come up with the name yet. And then we sat down. When I first sort of started, before I'd even met Stephen, I came up with Dialed In Sports. Because I don't know if you've ever seen the tennis player, like, when he won his game, he put the phone to his ear and then he, like, dropped it, like, oh, I'm dialed in, I'm focused. But there was sort of so much, you know, it was quite long, and people were like, dialed in, what am I calling in, or am I, you know? We came up with loads of names, and then I sort of came across, I just thought, re-minded, and it just sort of came to me, because Reminded was taken, so re-minded, so just say Reminded sounded great. And everyone liked it, and the boss Claire, my girlfriend, liked it, so she was the deciding factor, and I love it. So that's sort of how it came about.
And you said that you were defining your target audience and who you wanted to help and why. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that, as to kind of why you started it and who you are trying to help?
Yeah, so just anyone who, you know, I say, whether it's anyone at the highest level of sport or just someone who just loves sticking a pair of runners on and going out for a run and is suffering or living with an eating disorder, and they may not be quite sure whether they've got a full-on eating disorder or they definitely know, but we're here to, you know, I'm here to help in any way possible. And just making people feel like that having an eating disorder is normal and it is okay. Because what I get frustrated with is that idea of, if you have an eating disorder, you're really weak and you're not strong and you're not powerful or any of these things. And actually, you can use it to your own benefit, because you've become really good at, maybe, you know, being disciplined in one way. So why not just transfer those skills into being disciplined in, you know, a really positive way? So, and yeah, that, you know, and the media really gets to me here, because, you know, we just see images of, you know, skinny women, middle-aged, and it's like, there's so many people out there, you know, there are some, you know, skinny men, skinny women, and that's a normal thing. But just because, and they paint this picture that everyone with an eating disorder is weak, and it's like, no. Just because you have an eating disorder, you're not weak. You've got so many amazing attributes that you can use. So I'm really just trying to change the narrative and trying to just bring something refreshing to the space. And, you know, because I don't want people having to sit through, you know, long waiting lists and wait for a while and not feel heard, because particularly for men, you know, it is a space dominated by women, which is amazing. But sometimes for some men, that might be really, really, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, nerve-wracking, or, you know, they wouldn't want to, you know, say anything because they feel like they're not allowed. So, yeah, just trying to change it and have something different.
Yeah. And I think the thing about weakness is, like, I think that's a really important thing to say, because I think even if somebody's, you know, struggling with anorexia and they're really ill and they're physically very weak, mentally, like, honestly, every single person I've met that has had an eating disorder or has an eating disorder is the strongest person in the world, because to keep going through those difficult, like, every single second of the day, it's unbearable, and it's incredible that people are able to do that. But I think especially in sport, it's like, oh, you're weak because all of these pressures that were surrounding you, you couldn't manage them, so you developed an eating disorder. And, you know, that's weak because you couldn't cope with the pressure, or you couldn't, like, keep up with the elite or whatever, you developed an eating disorder, and that's weak. And I think that's where the rhetoric needs to change, because so many people, you know, sports people in particular, are coming out now about having eating disorders. And it's no surprise, because there's so much pressure. You're being, you know, you have to, at the end of the day, and I spoke about this with Marilyn Okoro when she came on a few weeks ago, you have to adapt your lifestyle. You have to eat in a particular way. You have to train in a certain way. You probably do more exercise than, well, you definitely do more exercise than the, you know, a random person on the street.
Yeah.
And that in itself, you know, and your body is probably constantly scrutinized. You know, for Marilyn, she was too muscular to be a runner or whatever. And people give you those comments. So you're going to question your body, but there needs to be that support in place as well to be like, okay, you have to eat this certain way. How are you feeling about that? Like, is everything going okay? Because, well, you know, you said earlier that if you can't control maybe your performance in your sport, one thing we can control is the food that we eat. And so it's very easy when you're told, you know, you have to eat in this specific way in order to perform well. It's easy to take that to the next level.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's yeah, they're pressured environments, and, you know, they can breed eating disorders, because especially, you know, particularly if you're at a high level as well, you're being constantly monitored weight wise. You may compare to other people, and, you know, they're banterous environments as well. So I've seen people, you know, a lot of my mates are footballers at Hartbury, but I see things on the group chat where they're making comments about, oh, so and so's put on a bit of weight since he's, you know, since this has happened, or, you know, and it's like, yeah, that on the surface for many people that might just be banter, but comments like that for me, what started my eating disorder, and just being aware of that in that sport culture and sport environment, you know, these people, you know, who are professional athletes will be taking care of themselves, and we have to understand that they're not going to be skipping meals, and they're not going to be, you know, but sometimes these environments do just treat them.
Yeah, and it's difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, when you're trying to perform at your best, you want to be the best as well. But also, you know, you think, oh, I have to manipulate my body in this way. So you might start skipping meals and not getting adequate nutrition, and then your performance slips. So it's again, it's a double-edged sword. But I also, what you were saying about the comments in the group chat, I think one thing that people often don't think about is, even if you're not directly targeting the comment, let's say they weren't directing it at you, even if you heard the comment, you then internalize that of like, people are mocking him or her or whatever because they're X, so I definitely can't be X, otherwise people will mock me as well. And that's always something that I've kind of tried to say to people, is the way that you talk, even if it's talk to your own body, everybody else will then also think, oh, well, if they think that about their own body, I wonder what they're thinking about mine. Which was a really big motivator for me, actually, in my eating disorder recovery, because I was obviously saying very negative things about my body. And I was like, wait, I don't want my friends to be thinking I think this about them. Like, I want them to know that I love and adore them for who they are, not for their body. But I think we often forget about the impact that, you know, even when comments aren't directed at somebody, that they can have.
Isn't it, I don't know, Hannah, if you see this, but as a culture, we just talk about weight all the time.
Yes.
All the time. Like, it's crazy. And, you know, if someone was to say to someone, oh, you've lost weight, you know, they notice that and they go, wow, so-and-so has noticed I have lost weight. Therefore, they're going to notice if I put it back on. So I need to do everything I can to make sure I keep losing weight or stay at the same weight. And, you know, it just blows my mind. Like, I had a client the other day who, someone said something, you know, he was doing super well and things were going really, really great. And then one comment just throws, you know, threw him off for a bit of time. And it's just like, what? How are we saying these things? And, you know, it's just being so mindful about what you say to someone, because you don't know what's going on with that person. You know, it might be perceived as banter, you know, for yourself, but, you know, just, we don't know what's happening with that other person in that moment.
No, exactly. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's, you know, even if you do notice that somebody's gained weight, lost weight, you never know the reason. And for you, it might be a good thing whether they've gained or lost weight, but just not commenting on it at all, I think, is the best way.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Joel. It's been so lovely to chat to you. Where can people go to find out more about Reminded?
So I have a website, which is www.re-minded.co.uk. I have an Instagram for Reminded, but I do a lot of posting on my own social media, which is Joelo, Joelo _Frost. And then Reminded is re__minded. So yeah, there's a few channels you can find, but yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's where you can find me.
I checked out your website, by the way, and I think it looks very cool.
Oh,
I really like the design of it. So if Stephen did that, was it Stephen?
Stephen helped with that.
Yeah, if Stephen did that, then Stephen's top
what a guy. Oh, I hope he does it. Thanks, Hannah.
Shout out to Stephen.
Yeah, well, no, thank you for having me on. And I think you just talking about it and being open and getting amazing guests on is just insane. And it's so cool to see someone who's young as well, who's just being so open and just, yeah, doing a great job. So thank you.
Oh, thanks, Joel. Yeah, lovely to chat to you. And thank you very much for coming on. Sorry,
it's
completely forgot where I was going, Dan.
Don't worry.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.